And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your RBLR Rays show. We welcome you back again, and this time I've got a very special returning guest, Carter Brantley, back again on the show. Welcome back, Carter. Carter, really glad to have you.
Appreciate it. I like the welcome back, Carter. I feel like that was a TV show or something. It was a little bit past my time. I don't know. But I appreciate you having me on for sure.
Yeah, super happy to have you back on. You're obviously kicking it over on the Buck Show. You guys are killing it over there. Really, really. I mean, it's always fun when we can do a little crossover. So excited to have you on. And we are excited to have all of you here who are watching, listening, however you may be consuming this content, reading it via maybe we have a tele. Do we have text transcribe? Maybe we should look into that if we don't already. Right. make sure we're hitting everybody. But if you are here and you are consuming this content, please like, subscribe, follow, continue to be building what we're building here at the RBLR network. We're excited to have you here. We're excited to bring you along with us, and we're glad that you are here, because we're doing this for you guys. We're doing this to continue to build this awesome community. So if you want to be a part of building that community and see where we're going to go and where we're going from here, like, subscribe, follow, and you'll just be a part of what we're building. And tonight we've got a pretty awesome show to build on. There's been quite a bit of news in the last week. It's probably going to be one of our more jam-packed news shows of the offseason, just because we had a couple deadlines pop off in the last week that will give us some things to talk about. So we got a packed show today. We're going to talk about somebody who is well worthy of being talked about, one of our player reviews. We're going to start off with a player review of maybe the best player on the team, maybe one of the best players in the American League. We'll get to that. We're also going to talk about some 40-man fallout, some of the guys that are gone, some of the guys that are on the roster now. We're going to talk about manager of the year. We're going to talk about Cy Young, and we're going to wrap it up with some free agency buzz. There's plenty of that right now with the non-tender dropping last night. There's a lot of guys that are interesting prospects that could potentially be Rays. So stick around for all that awesome stuff. But we're going to start it off with a guy who needs no introduction, a guy that is, has become even more than I think we could have ever dreamed we brought him on here. And it's the gentleman who we're doing our player review on today. And it's someone that you may have noticed we didn't mention last week when we were talking about Silver Slugger. That's because we were saving it all for this episode. We're going to talk about Yandy Diaz, the man, the myth, the legend, the stalwart leadoff first baseman for the Tampa Bay Rays. Just what a season for Yandy Diaz. What a season. And capping it off with, of course, the first time a Ray has won the Silver Slugger Award since Carl Crawford in 2010, 13-year gap since a Ray has won a Silver Slugger. So what a season from Yandy. I just killed it in every possible way. And there's a lot of ways you could look at, we could just read off his slash line, which was obviously fantastic. But I want to talk about a couple of things that really show how well he excelled just above and beyond this last season. And I want to talk about it in the context of a statement that I'd like to make about Yandy Diaz, and that is that he is the best first baseman in the American League, and I don't think it's close. He's among the best first baseman in all of baseball, in my opinion, but I think he's unequivocally the best first baseman in the American League. And I've got a couple of stats to back that up. Just a couple things that I think make it super, super clear if you don't already think that way already. Number one, first in WRC plus among first basemen in all of baseball, by the way, not just the American League, in all of baseball, first in WRC plus, meaning basically he adds the most value with his bat of any player that's man's first base in all of baseball. He is third in F4, Fangraphs WAR, at a 4.7, first in the American League among first basemen. He is first in on-base percentage at a 4.10. He is fifth. He has the fifth lowest K percentage in the American League among first basemen. What does that mean? He walks a ton. He gets on base a ton. He does not strike out. That's usually pretty good. And he is third in weighted on-base percentage in all of MLB and first in the American League. So all the key stats that we talk about, we look at a value somebody can add offensively, he hits it there. Defensively, he's also excellent. He ranks in the top five in first baseman. First baseman is not graded super well by Fangraphs, but he ranks in the top five among first baseman in the AL and in MLB in defensive rating. Again, first baseman isn't rated too high, so it's kind of tough to look at that. But I think anyone who watches Yandy day in and day out knows he has an incredible amount of value from it, from defensive side, even more than his offensive side. So that's just kind of a fire hydrant of all the amazing things Yandy has done to just kind of, you know, for me, he's the best first baseman in the American League. Carter, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's not really super particularly close. No. The American League first base pool isn't, it's not overpowering or anything. I think Josh Naylor from Cleveland might be, you know, number two, but the gap between him and Yandy is pretty sizable. All the stats that you mentioned were great. The win probability added is phenomenal. I mean, it's just across the board. You can go into advanced analytics, you can go to traditional stats. Everything in between, it's all kind of just telling of how great Yandy was this year. It's going to be really exciting to see how he builds on it, you know, moving forward. Hopefully the Rays can kind of build a little bit more stability around
him.
With Brandon Lau hopefully coming back and having a healthy season. Yeah. And just building a little bit more stability in the lineup can hopefully make him have an even better season next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him having an even better season than what he had last year.
Right, for sure.
But, I mean, I don't see any reason why he couldn't. I think the point you make about him having even more stability in the lineup to sort of give him some more thump, I think is a great point. Because when you look at where he sat in the lineup, he leads off. And I don't expect that to change. But, again, if you know that if Yandy gets on base, you got to deal with all these other guys that are going to come from behind him. It's going to affect the pitcher's mentality. It's going to, you know, force pitchers to either pitch to Yandy or have to use some of their best pitches on Yandy. That'll then potentially go to guys, you know, their secondary level pitches, or are they going to go to guys who can really capitalize on it? And I think the Rays are going to have a very top heavy lineup, not in the sense that the bottom is like bad per se, but the top is just going to be just pure excellence. And I think that Yandy is the key to that. His consistency throughout the year is what made it so excellent. He did not have a single month in this last year where his WRC plus was under 100, meaning he was a above average bat every single month this past season. That is consistency. Consistency is one of the most valuable, you know, aspects of any performance, whether that's, you know, an athletic performance or any sort of work performance or, you know, school performance, whatever. Consistency is the name of the game. So he's been able to do that for so long. One of my favorite stats that I looked up as I was sort of, you know, combing through some of the greatness that Yandy put on display this last season comes in the form of the off stat. Off is a stat I've mentioned it a couple times on the show in the last couple weeks, because it's a stat that I find really interesting. And it basically, it grades how many runs you create above average. And that is with your bat as well as with your legs running base paths. Now, Yandy is not a guy who creates a lot of runs through the base paths. He's not a speedster. He's not stealing a lot of bases, which to me makes it so much more impressive that in the American League last year, the only person who had a higher off stat was Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani had a 60.6 off stat, which is bonkers. But number two, Yandy Diaz. So in a stat that would take into account the guys who are speed demons, who are stealing bases, who are legging out, you know, triples and doubles where they wouldn't normally get that, where that a stat like that is valued, Yandy still creates so much value with his bat that he is above those guys, those speedster type guys. So just you know. It's just so clear that Yandy is pure excellence, and anybody who is, you know, sleeping on Yandy anymore is just, you know, they're missing out. I think generally the media has kind of come around and is giving Yandy his flowers, obviously giving him the Silver Slugger. I don't know if I would have been able to control myself if they hadn't given Yandy the Silver Slugger, because it was so clear. By the way, my other favorite stat that I found was that the gap between Yandy and the next closest first baseman in the American League in WRC plus was 35 points. So they're literally saying he's creating 35 more runs than the next closest first baseman. And if you include qualified hitters only, it's a 46 run difference. Tristan Casas had a really, really sort of underratedly good season. I don't think people talked about him enough. By the way, 130 WRC plus out of Tristan Casas. That's a name to watch. A name I am now slightly, more afraid of. But you know, what are some of the things? What are some? Do you have any particularly favorite moments from Yandy over this last year?
Oh man, it's hard to pick really, because they're like when a guy has a great season like this, and you know, baseball is a war of attrition. So many games, there's so many moments that you can point to where a guy really kind of excelled and showed out. But I think that, oh man, the beginning of the year he was as hot as ever. You know, that obviously the 13 game winning streak was, you know, famous throughout baseball, and everyone was talking about it. And Yandy obviously played a huge role in that. As he played a huge role in the success of the Rays throughout the season, but especially that beginning of the season. I know that's not, it's kind of a lazy out because it's not really a moment, but you know, those first 13 games, just like the rest of the team, he was hitting it as hard as anyone else. And it was really fun to watch. Yeah. Cause the lineup was clicking, it was humming. It's kind of like the Phillies with Kyle Schwarber. You know, they have Schwarber in that leadoff spot and he just gets on you. Yandy's kind of the same way, except he, you know, doesn't hit below 200. He leads the American League in batting average, but he also hits the crap out of the ball just like Kyle Schwarber. So it was definitely a lot of fun to watch him this season, and especially at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So it brings up an interesting point. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. With how valuable of a bat that Yandy has been, obviously we see him in the leadoff spot. Do you think the Rays should consider moving him out of the leadoff spot? That's something I've seen occasionally people have brought up. It's because his bat is just so valuable and so powerful. Should we see him in the four hole, the three hole? Is that something you think that you'd like to see the Rays do, or you think the Rays should do?
I don't know. I certainly see its merit because, you know, you create more traffic on the base paths to set him up for his successful at bats, so that he's not, you know, just hitting with nobody on to start the game every time. But at the same time, like, if it ain't broke, don't break it, that kind of thing. So I kind of push back against it because he clearly had such a huge amount of success this past season. He seems to be comfortable in that role. And I just, I don't know. It's hard to disqualify how good you can have, or how important having a good leadoff hitter can be, especially in modern baseball. You saw it with the Braves and Ronald Acuna Jr. I mean, good gracious. Yeah. Like when he got on base, the rest of the lineup's numbers went up astronomically. Like it was just insane. And obviously Yandy Diaz isn't going to steal 70 bases anytime soon. But I think his value is similar. You know, when he's rolling out of that leadoff spot, the Rays are probably going to win a lot of those games. So yeah, I'd say keep him there because it's a lot of fun to watch too. It's fun to get the game off on a good start instead of, oh, let's just run some Joe Schmo out there since nobody's going to be on base. When Yandy's out there, it's, you never know what could happen. So I'd say keep him there.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point about Yandy creating a sense of danger to start an inning or start a game off, that, you know, like, hey, there, I cannot, you know, sometimes you see a leadoff guy is just kind of a, you know, like a just guy who's going to try to tap the ball and get on base. Right. That is not the case with Yandy Diaz. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it around the league a little bit more. You mentioned a Schwarber, you mentioned Acuna, although Acuna is just kind of does a little bit of everything well.
Right.
But it's interesting to see that there's a little bit of a movement to put some power in the leadoff spot, maybe to kind of put the pitcher on their back foot to start. So that's really interesting. And I completely agree. I expect to see him stay in the leadoff spot. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I do think that they have guys who are excellent in those, you know, middle of the lineup roles. So I expect them to keep him at the leadoff spot. But I mean, you talk about, you know, valuable leadoff hitters. I mean, it's probably Yandy and Acuna are two of the most valuable leadoff hitters in all of baseball, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, those two guys, and then maybe Simeon and Schwarber, the kind of the rounds out the lineup. But yeah, they're definitely up there. Simeon obviously had a wonderful season. He played, I think, every game this year, so he was remarkable.
Yeah,
as well.
That's crazy.
And coming out of the second base spot, just crazy production. But Yandy was just fantastic. So he's definitely up there. It's tough to beat Acuna, you know, unanimous MVP. Yeah. He had 40-70. It's tough to beat him, but he's definitely up there. I'd say top three for sure.
For sure. For sure. So with that in mind, if you're going to give him a letter grade for this last season, what would you give him?
I mean, it's hard not to say an A+, you know, because like, there's not really much he could have done better. He increased his home run total, hit for a little bit more pop. He was hitting for extra bases a lot more. Because that was always the knock with Yandy. You know, he's got all those muscles, and he was never really much of a power guy. He was kind of a contact hitter. And it's like, dude, you're like freaking, you know, you're going to bench press the pitcher. Like, what are you doing? Like hitting ground balls to the right side. He increased his power numbers, and yet he also increased his contact numbers, which is insane to think about. So A+ all the way. No comments.
Yep. And I've mentioned it a couple times. We've been doing these player reviews. I've been saving my A+ for one player, one player only. I don't like to give out A+s left and right. I think, for sure, you know, A+ is like the best you could possibly be. Yandy's right. The best you could possibly be. Absolutely. He was, you know, he got MVP votes. I mean, he was a difference maker for this Rays team. I shudder to think where this team would have been without him, but it was glad to have him on this team. And it, you know, it's crazy to think about where he's come from. You know, hey, there's this guy we just got, you know, all the, you know, and we don't know how, you know, how good he might be. He's got some really cool peripherals, but we'll see what he can become. And now he's the, you know, a top one or two first baseman in all of baseball and the best first baseman in the American League. It's a crazy world. It just goes to show the if the Rays take a shot on the guy, there's a good chance that there's a reason for it. And you know, going into a little bit more of that, we saw some of the guys they're willing to take shots on and not willing to take shots on with the 40-man fallout that we saw happening on Tuesday. On Tuesday night, we made some finalizations of the 40-man roster before the Rule 5 draft, which is coming in December 6th. There's still about you know, 3-4 weeks away before that actually happens, but the 40-man has been set. And those who could be protected have been protected. Two of the guys that were added to the 40-man were Yaniel Curet, I believe is how his name is pronounced, and Austin Shenton. Two guys who were DFA'd, Cooper Criswell, Calvin Vosche, who has now been traded. Among some of the Rule 5 eligible prospects the Rays didn't add that were of note, Willie Vasquez, Cole Wilcox, Ian Seymour, Herbito Hernandez, Karen Meisner, Anthony Molina, among others. What are your thoughts just, you know, looking at some of that, were you surprised by any of the people that were or weren't protected or anything else surprising in that kind of player movement?
You know, not particularly. I was a little surprised to see Fauché go. I thought that his time in Tampa was still kind of just beginning. He seemed like kind of – I don't want to compare him to Andrew Kittredge because Kittredge was an all-star, but it seemed like he was kind of on that same sort of slow progress trajectory. So I was a bit surprised to see him let go. But at the same time, you know, who am I to question the Rays front office? They've proven time and time again that they know what they're doing, especially when it comes to pitchers. But I'm really excited to see the Cure guy. He's got some electric stuff down there in the minors. I'll be interested to see how he progresses if they try to kind of move him towards the bullpen or what they're going to do with his arm, because he's just got some electric stuff. And obviously the Shenton, the corner infielder that they got in the Diego Castillo deal, that's pretty exciting too. It's a left-handed hitter. If there's one thing that I think that the Rays roster is really missing sometimes, it's some left-handed pop. And if Shenton can bring that, then that'd be wonderful. It'd be great to see him come up and make an impact on the major league level. But yeah, that's kind of my overall thoughts on it so far.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about Austin Shenton being a left-handed batter. I think when I was sort of analyzing who I thought would come or go, I did overlook a little bit that he was a lefty. It didn't factor as much into my analysis of that as I think maybe it should have, because I think there's really astute point there. Left-handed, you know, batters are hard to come by that are of a high quality, and for a corner infielder that's a left-handed bat is someone that's very valuable. So I think there's a good chance that's a good portion of the reason why, you know, he was added. Obviously Cooper Criswell and Calvin Fauché were never going to be necessarily world beaters. At least we thought. I kind of thought the Calvin Fauché experiment just kind of ran its course. Just wasn't really working out. I would have been nice to see him go the route of Andrew Kittredge, like you mentioned, but it just didn't seem like it was kind of working out. Yeah. I was a little surprised to see Cole Wilcox not added, although because of his injury, there is a chance he just may not get taken. I will not be shocked if a guy like Cole Wilcox or even a Herbito Hernandez or Cameron Meisner are some of the guys we may lose going into the Rule 5 draft, but you never know. I would love to see those guys all stick around, but I also wouldn't be shocked if they go. Once again, the Rule 5 draft is on December 6th, so we got a little bit more time until then. Any of those guys that we just kind of mentioned, do you see any of them going in the Rule 5 draft?
Yeah, other than Wilcox maybe, but the injury does kind of seem to scare teams a little bit. I know we'll get to the non-tenders later, but the Brandon Woodruff injury, he's out for all of 2024. So injuries tend to play a huge factor, as they unfortunately should. It's just an unfortunate part of the game, especially with pitchers. I'm a bit interested to see where he ends up and if he ends up anywhere. Obviously would love to see him stick around. He's got a lot of talent. So we'll just have to see, but definitely interested to see how things shake out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to wait a little bit to see on that one. That's December 6th. So we got some time to wait on that. But another thing that happened this last week was Manager of the Year was announced, and there was a little bit of a scuttlebutt on the Rays side of Twitter. when that happened, because Brandon Hyde won to the surprise of very few people, even us on this show. Pat waxed eloquently about how he was, you know, not going to be surprised if Brandon Hyde won, but that he felt that Cash should win. I agree with him. The voters did not. And not only did they not agree, but they really didn't agree. They gave Brandon Hyde Manager of the Year. They didn't give Kevin Cash a first place vote. That was very, very surprising to me. And I, not that Brandon Hyde, you know, did a bad job, or the manager of the Texas Rangers did a bad job. They were obviously excellent, like top of the line. But the fact that they both got, you know, all the first place votes, Cash didn't get a single one, that was a little surprising to me. Were you surprised by that as well?
A little bit. The Rays certainly, I mean, as we've talked about on this show several times, they dealt with a multitude of injuries, unfortunately, this season. And, you know, Cash was just stay the course, and very, very just, you know, a solid presence in that dugout and that clubhouse. So I do believe that he might have been worthy of some consideration for the first place votes. But it's also tough with the Rays because they're just such a perennial success. Like, it's not really a surprise anymore. It's kind of like, well, yeah, the Rays are really good. Kevin Cash did a great job. What else is new? It's almost like voter fatigue. It's kind of, you know, it's just kind of like, what's new? Like the Orioles and the Rangers, they were the new kids on the block this year. And, you know, Bruce Bochy, it was his first season as the Rangers manager, and they immediately made the playoffs after struggling so mightily the past couple of years. So I kind of get it in some extent. But at the same time, like, you know, it's kind of like with LeBron James, like over the past few years, like in his prime, he wasn't getting an MVP when he was the best player in basketball because voters were just like, yeah, LeBron James is amazing. Let's move on. And it's kind of the same way I feel like with Kevin Cash and the AL Manager of the Year.
Yep. And it's unfortunate, at least in my opinion, because I think he's deserving. But for the sure. Voter fatigue, I think, is very, very real. I was very surprised to see him not get any first place votes. I find that to be a little disingenuous because how can you look at the job that Cash did over this last year and think that's not the best? How can none of the 30 people who voted on that think that's the best manager in baseball? I just find that hard to believe. I'm not going to take a shot. I am going to take a shot. The person who covers the team didn't feel that way. I'm just a little surprised by that. You can have your opinion. That's fine. I'm just a little surprised that the person who covers the team didn't feel that way. But, you know, that's okay. That's all right. It's not a problem. I was just a little surprised by that. I'm sure that Kevin Cash doesn't care. I'm sure he's going to just continue to go on and manage, because I think at this point in his career, what's left for him is a title. You know, he's done everything else you can do. He's won the division. He's won the American League. There's only one thing left for him. There's only one, you know, rung on the trophy case left, and that's World Series. So hopefully this will be the year that he does that. I'd love to see him do that. Hope to see it, but I guess we'll find out. Another award that was given out in this last week was Cy Young. Just wanted to briefly mention it. A little bit of a sting in the eyes of some Rays fans is that Blake Snell was the winner from the National League, and especially singing as the last vestiges of that Rays, the trade the Rays made for him, are just kind of going out with a whimper. That's a little unfortunate. It's a tough to watch when you look back on that trade. What's your feel on that trade as the dust has seemingly fully settled on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a rare Rays loss in a trade. It doesn't happen too often, but it happens. You know, they missed out on Trey Turner a while ago. They had a chance to get him in the Steven Souza deal, and instead they got Steven Souza. And you know, we all know how that kind of played out. And yeah, you know, at the time, I feel like everyone was kind of like, oh, you know, the Rays are at it again. You know, they're doing their thing. Luis Patino, Francisco Mejia, oh, they're going to be great. And they kind of weren't, unfortunately. And Snell was on a relatively, I don't want to say super duper team friendly deal, but it wasn't super expensive to, you know, $10 million for a Cy Young Award winner is not that bad. So the Rays obviously would have loved to have his services this year with all the starting pitching injuries. But yeah, it stings, but it's part of the business. You're not going to bat 1,000. You know, even as the Rays front office, as successful as they are, they're going to have some misses. And unfortunately, this was one of them.
Yeah, it was kind of an unfortunate situation. It just kind of seemed like the relationship between the two sides had deteriorated. Yeah, it was kind of unfortunate. It seemed like whatever happened, but like during and after Snell being taken out of that game in the World Series, something deteriorated beyond repair there. tough to say for sure. We may never know truly what all that was said and done and happened in, you know, inside the walls of Tropicana Field when all that was going on. But it's unfortunate that he had to move on. And, you know, I'm happy for him, happy for his success. It's been kind of crazy that his only two seasons where he's been like fully healthy and firing in all cylinders, he's won the Cy Young. It's crazy. It's just sort of a side effect of the fact he's been hurt almost every other season he's pitched. Literally every season he's pitched, he's been hurt on some level. So, and even the season for the Rays where he won the Cy Young, one of the knocks against him when he was in the running for the Cy Young was he missed some time because he was hurt. So, I mean, obviously he's a little bit of a glass cannon, but he is a cannon when he's functioning fully. Absolutely. So good for him. Happy to see that for him. The American League Cy Young, not a surprise at all. Garrett Cole, he deserved it. Throw up my mouth a little bit as I say it because I hate having to say it, but it's true. Yeah. Garrett Cole is really, really good, right. And he deserved to win the Cy Young. I was very happy to see Zach Eflin get one second place vote, and he was sixth overall in voting. I think it's a really good recognition of how great he was this season. I think, you know, he had a couple of tough starts towards the end that kind of inflated some of his numbers and counting stats that kind of put him out of the running for Cy Young. And right. Cole was just so excellent that it would have been tough for anybody to beat him this year for Cy Young. But Eflin had a really nice season this year. So it was cool to see him get recognized there, at least that much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eflin was probably one of the best free agent signings in Rays history, and he was definitely one of the best in the past offseason. And he was fantastic. Unfortunately, Garrett Cole was just even more fantastic. As much as, like you said, it's vomit-inducing to say that about him because, you know, it's the Yankees, but whatever. He was really good. And it was weird, all the unanimous votes. It was just like there's no variety at all. Like 98% of the Cy Young and MVP votes went to the winners, and it was like, God, like – I know that we're in this era of like everyone's really informed. Everyone's kind of on the same page when it comes to like evaluating talent and evaluating seasons. But good gracious, it'd be nice to at least see some kind of variety. But it was also one of these rare years where everyone was kind of like, yeah, this is pretty much who is the best at these respective awards. So I kind of get it. But hopefully next season's not the same because that would be kind of just boring for the award season. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think next season is going to be interesting because we're going to enter for the first time in a couple years now a season where Shohei Ohtani is not going to pitch. So right. His value is going to be a little bit less than it's been in the past. Aaron Judge won MVP the year before this one because of obviously a record-breaking season. I'm still not sure he was actually better than Shohei Ohtani, but we'll let that pass. I think there's going to be a lot more parity in the MVP conversation, at least in the American League in this upcoming season, because Shohei will still be as valuable as he's ever been offensively, but will take away once again that pitching value. So it may add a little bit more parity into that race. Be interesting to see how that plays into things going forward for him. I agree. I like to see a little bit more conversation around it. It was kind of unanimous this year, especially especially in the American League. I don't think there was a little bit of discussion around National League MVP, at least a little bit. I mean, it ended up being kind of clear, but at least there was a little bit of discussion, towards the end. It was pretty clear that, I don't think there was really any discussion. I mean, so there was a late charge for Corey Seager, but I really think it was pretty clear, as long as Shohei Ohtani is pitching and hitting at the level he's pitching and hitting, I don't think no one should win MVP because if the award is most valuable, I don't know how you could say he's not the most valuable. So right. I'd love to see him be the most valuable player on the Rays team. That would be awesome because he's currently not signed to a team. Right. I think I'm just going to stop watching the National League permanently if he goes to the Dodgers currently pontificated about along with Mike Trout. I just don't want to see that happen. Don't need to see that. We'll get to the free agency stuff in just a minute. But if there is something that you do want to see on your body, it is RBLR Rays merch. And you should be seeing it on your body. And if you do want to see it on your body, go to shop.rblrsports.com. Get you some awesome merch. Get you a great shirt. Get you an MVP level shirt that is going to, it's going to hit on every single level, and it's going to deal from the mound on every single level. And if you want to get 10% off of whatever awesomeness you do want to get, promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, get 10% off of whatever you'd like to get. There's some really cool stuff there. There's some hats. There's some t-shirts. There's just good stuff. Go get you some goodness. Shop.rblrsports.com. heading back into kind of the last big thing that had happened in this last week, and just some buzz in general. It's just sort of free agency has been ongoing. The biggest thing was the non-tender deadline that happened last night, where teams had the option. They had players who they were going to tender or non-tender contracts to their arbitration-eligible players. Several teams elected not to do that. The Rays tendered contracts to all their arbitration-eligible players, so no news there from the Rays side of things. But there's quite a bit of news as far as some of the players that did not get tendered a contract. Some of the big names were Spencer Turnbull, Brandon Woodruff, and a familiar face, Austin Meadows. So there's just a couple of the names out there. Were there any of the names that were interesting to you, or any other or any particular interest in some of the guys that I just mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Meadows connection is interesting to pursue, just because, you know, it's former Ray, and of course, you know, he's been going through some tough times, so it'd be awesome to get him back, you know, where he had his most success in his career. So that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, Spencer Turnbull, obviously a really big name to kind of think about, just because he seems like that type of reclamation project that the Rays love to do with their pitchers or with their pitching staff. Some more free agents that kind of came to mind were definitely another kind of reclamation project. He's a popular one, Jack Flaherty, because he seemingly has the stuff to maybe turn it around and then get a big time contract. So where better to sign for a 1-year deal and just kind of fix your craft than Tampa? You know, that seems like a match made in heaven. Also the shortstop position is kind of up in the air. So Joey Wendell was kind of a name that kind of floated in my head. It's kind of another reunion sort of thing, because he's a free agent from the Marlins, and another left-handed bat to put in the lineup. So those were kind of the guys that popped into my head.
Yeah. Those are all really good potential out there. I think that one thing that I'm looking at for the Rays going into this next season is, with the pitching situation being what it is, as far as our starters, we've got so many that are hurt right now, with the potential of potentially losing Tyler Glasnow to trade in the offseason. I think it would make sense for the Rays to add as many of these guys who I think, you know, maybe could be starters, could be, you know, middle relievers that go 2 or 3 innings. They did that with Alexander. I think they could very much do that with Turnbull. I think he's a really, really good candidate for that. As a guy who they could come in, work, you know, get him to let him work on his craft a little bit, take the pressure out of starting and say, hey, just give me your 3 best innings, you know, in the middle of this game right here, or close out this game, you know, give me 3 innings from the 6th to the 9th, close it out. Maybe that could be something we see from Spencer Turnbull. I don't know if the Rays are going to go that route or if they're going to give him a shot, but I think there's some potential there. I think the Austin Meadows connection is definitely an interesting one, with Jose Siri now being the starting center fielder, with the potential for Manuel Margot to move on, as is being, you know, very widely, you know, posited by almost every pundit in the industry right now that, you know, Margot's on the move. I think there's a really good chance that you're going to be looking at Jose Siri as your starting center fielder, and then maybe Luke Raley as your backup center fielder, which means if Siri ever gets hurt at all, which he has shown he can be prone to, and then you got to slide Luke Raley over. Well, now you got guys like Josh Lowe and Randy would be starting every day in the outfield. You're running a little bit low on your outfield depth. A guy like, you know, Meadows would be nice to have available. Obviously there's guys in Durham who could come up and fill that depth, but it would be interesting to have a guy like him available. The question would kind of be, how available is he? And I do think there would be some value in potentially saying, hey, come in, we'll sign you to a minor league deal if he's willing to do that. I don't know where his headspace is at, right, or if that he would find that insulting, or what, you know, I don't know how that looks to him right now. That would be probably the negotiation process. But if he's willing to come on like a minor league deal and be in Durham and be a mentor to the guys there as he's kind of getting back on his feet, and then kind of be, you know, when he's ready to go, he can be ready to go. And I think he could go straight up to the majors pretty quickly. Despite what he showed in Detroit, we know exactly what he's capable of. He's capable of it in the Trop. The Trop is a very comfortable hitting environment for him. I would love to see him come back. I don't know if it's what's going to happen. I think if he's going to go somewhere, it makes sense for him to go somewhere where they're going to let him work through what he needs to work through, whatever that may be. And then be of value when he's ready to be of value. So I would like to see it personally. I would like to see it. I don't know if we will, but I'd like to see it personally.
Yeah. I mean, Meadows had those amazing, he had an all-star season here, I think, and had a triple digit RBI season. I know RBI is an archaic stat. I shouldn't be talking about it, but
I like RBI. I like RBI. I'm an RBI guy.
One of the games to score runs. So it's kind of still,
It matters.
Yeah, it's not the most important stat, but, you know, anyways, we're yeah, I would love to see Meadows brought in, like you said, in a mentorship role, and just see what he wants to do. You know, just at least have a conversation with him, see where, like you said, his headspace is at, because that's obviously incredibly important. Make sure he's good, make sure he's on board, and if he is, then hey, great. You could find yourself a pretty quality left-handed bat and at a potential corner outfield spot, a position of need for the Rays, especially as Margot, like you said, is likely, unfortunately, going to have to be moved on from. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm really interested in the Meadows angle.
One other guy I wanted to get your thoughts on is one that's been – we talked about it a good bit on the show, and it's continuing to be buzzed about. Now the word is, according to people who apparently have insight – I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with them, but they seem to think that Tyler Glasnow is likely to be moved this offseason. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we play this dance every offseason with the Rays. It feels like every offseason we're reminded, oh, well, their payroll flexibility is always there. Like, ownership's always willing to spend a little bit more, and it never ends up being the case. So they're obviously going to set a record if they just hold true with this current roster for the highest payroll in team history. And I unfortunately don't think that that's going to be the case. I just don't have faith that ownership is really willing to commit that much financial latitude or just commit that much money to this ball club. I know that's kind of dark and doom and gloom, but unfortunately you just can't ignore the trends. So I unfortunately do think he's going to be traded, not from a perspective of, oh, well, we need to move on from him. His value is no longer there. His value is there, and the Rays have a need for starting pitching. So from a roster perspective, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but unfortunately the business is business, you know, and that's just how it be sometimes. So I expect him to be traded as well, as much as I would love to see him stay on.
I don't have any insight on this other than just my gut feeling. Right. I'm curious to see what the stance, because we haven't really seen any moves that indicate how Sternberg is going to treat the team as monetarily since the new stadium deal has been announced.
Good point. It's a very good point.
I am curious to see if it is business as usual, that he's going to be a penny pincher, or if we see a little bit more investment from him now that it's sort of locked in, that there's no chance of any other nonsense going on, that it's locked in. We've got the stadium deal. We're going to be here. Because to me, if you look, I mean, and again, you know, I'm a sports fan, so that's my lens. But if you look at it through the lens of investment, right? If you're going to be locked into a location, you want to build, you know, equity and build, you know, connection with your customer base, it doesn't really make sense to remove the things that they're comfortable with and they like as soon as you've just locked in there. So to just lock in and say, we're going to be here, this is what we're going to do, and then immediately move one of the most popular players on the team, like the next offseason, to me, it's not a good look. I would understand why they would do it. I just don't think it's a good decision. I know that the Rays are going to be taking calls on everyone, and that, and there's so much buzz about the Rays, you know, likely to move Glasnow. I wonder if some of the buzz that is being created, you know, in that vein is just the fact that the Rays are taking calls on everybody. That we know this. The Rays take calls on everybody, pretty much except for Wander Franco. They take calls on literally everybody, and they're listening. They're listening for a move to be made. So I don't know. It's impossible for me to know what the guys like Passan are interpreting and spitting back out onto the airwaves, but I wonder what the stance of Stu is going to be now that they're locked in. I don't know if it's going to change at all, but I hope it does. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would love. I hope that's true. I really would love to see the Rays actually commit to spending on an actual baseball team instead of just raking in the bottom five every season in payroll. Just because, man, it's depressing. Like it's kind of like you can't really invest in a player jersey because you don't know if they're going to be there once they hit arbitration and once they actually start making real baseball money, because the Rays clearly have a talented front office. And as well as the front office has been doing with this limited budget, imagine how much better they could do with an actual baseball budget. You know, like right. A lot of people talk about how like, oh, well, what would they spend the money on? And it's a valid question, but it's a question I don't have to figure out. The front office is so good. Like they can figure it out. Like I'm sure they'll find some way to spend $30 million or however much excess budget they're given. So I really do hope that the stadium does play a factor in it. That would be wonderful. Unfortunately, I'm just incredibly pessimistic when it comes to owners of all teams, but especially the Rays. So I'm not going to hold my breath, but I hope you're right. It'd be awesome.
Yep, I hope I'm right too. Pam's right here. She hopes that we're right, that I'm right too, and the Tyler Glasnow sticks around. And I want to thank all of you that are out there in the audience for sticking around, for being a part of this show. It's been fun to continue to talk about some of the really, really cool things that are going on throughout this offseason. There's a lot of cool stuff left to come. Rule 5 coming up soon. Free agency is going to continue to kick into gear. So stick around. Continue to like, subscribe, be a part of what we're building here at the RBLR Network. We've got some really fun shows to be had, more player reviews to do. I have heard whispers of Jeopardy potentially returning sometime in the future, so stay tuned for that. If you liked that, I really want to take a moment to thank Carter for coming on. This has been awesome. Really, really appreciate having you on and being a part of the show. We love to have you on every single time. Don't be a stranger. You're always welcome to join in. And once again, thank you everybody for joining us, being a part of the show. We're excited to continue to take you through this journey of the offseason into what hopefully begins a campaign that ends in a World Series for the Rays in 2024. So stick around, keep being a part of this, and Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.